Hello, this is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat for the month of August 2022. I almost said July, but July's got skipped. So here we are, and now again, see, for a while, I was contemplating no longer referring to it as a mostly monthly live chat because I had done many monthly live chats in a row without missing one. But I knew it was only a matter of time, and July was it. That was when we finally missed the monthly live chat. So now the moniker of mostly monthly live chat is maintained. And sip, for those of you who are fans of the live proofread alouds. So here we are. It is August. It's been a little over a month since I chatted last, and obviously, the elephant on the battlefield right now is the announcement I put out last week. Actually, the elephant on the battlefield is there are two elephants charging the battlefield. One is the announcement I put out last week, which I am not going to discuss in detail because I don't want to get bogged down with that. I will just mention that it was a thing. And then the second thing is the article that was supposed to be available on Monday for early access, and then for everyone today for general access on how to corrupt a warlock, which the more vigilant among you have noticed isn't. First of all, the announcement I put out last week, for anybody who missed it, it was on the website. It's still actually on the website because it is the most recent thing that I have published, much to my shame. And it basically said, hey, I keep saying that I'm not feeling well and having struggles, and here's what's really going on, and I am going through some rather serious mental health issues. And in order to take care of them, I have dialed back the pressure on myself this month a little bit by altering my release schedule, which didn't quite work the way I hoped. And letting some projects go sit fallow for a month. I'm not going to go into too much detail, and, you know, because there's really no need to talk about that. It is affecting me. It's affecting me greatly, and me coming into Discord this morning and immediately taking something someone said a little too personally and starting a fight speaks to that, which once again, as I have said, does not, like, that sort of behavior is not excused by the fact that I'm having a hard time. I still don't get to do that stuff. And, you know, even though it was an ugly confrontation, and I do admit I was wrong and I apologized, but, you know, I still have to be better about that because you're still, no matter what's affecting you, you're responsible for your behavior. I personally believe that, and you're responsible for the way you treat other people. That said, there are some other issues in what happened this morning that do need to be discussed, but that can be handled privately now. Point is, yeah, it's slowing me down. It's making it hard to focus, making it hard to concentrate. It's really affecting my social interactions. For the month of August, I basically put my two games on hold. I'll be resuming in a couple of weeks just to, you know, get my head in a good place. So then there was supposed to be an article this Monday. There's still going to be four articles this month. There has to be. Otherwise, I don't get paid and then I starve and die. So, and I don't want to add starving and dying to the list. But obviously now I'm behind and I think I'm just going to pick up, you know, the next article will hit on Friday. And then I'll slip in this previous article sometime before the end of the month, right? Friday was supposed to be the next early release. August 19th, yeah. Okay. And part of the problem is this whole warlock thing, which I'm going to take just a moment to address, because I decided what I would do is put the big series aside, especially because I really don't want to fuck up Town Mode. I'm very happy with how Town Mode is going, but I've realized that it was another one of those really ambitious things that needs some extra work, and I realized I only had vague notions about what I was planning to do with it when I started it. And those have since had a chance to gel a little bit. And they're also constantly changing. So I put off town mode and I put off the strategy and tactics thing and said, you know what, I'll hit this stuff up next month when I feel like I can address it and not ruin the topics. So then I decided to go through my list and pull out some lighter stuff that I thought would be easier to write. And one of the things that someone, I think it was Procellus actually, who asked for this, for me to discuss corruption. And this was a conversation that happened months and months, maybe years ago in Discord. I don't even remember. Because we were talking about warlocks specifically and, you know, and like, and yeah, corrupting a warlock. How do you go about corrupting a warlock? And I did say at the time I had some specific things to say because I kind of realized when I look back on it, I do love the moral corruption plot. And in fact, in my Angry Open World game, one of the things that the players never discovered was going on because they TPK'd was that there was a moral corruption plot happening in the town they were in, and it was affecting the four main movers and shakers of the town. They were each being corrupted, basically having their, they were being twisted to evil. Whispers in their ear kind of a thing, and it was sort of coming to a head, and it was all connected through one thing. But anywho, so I did have a lot to say about this whole corruption thing. And I sat down and I started outlining it and drafting it and brainstorming ideas and realized I sure do have a lot to say about it. But I kept hitting this difficult point where I realized that everything I wanted to say was going to open a gigantic can of worms. Okay, and when, you know, being an internet content creator, when I say gigantic can of worms, I mean I'm going to get shit about it. Okay? And the reason is this whole corruption thing, I realized it was going to touch on a bunch of things that are fighty topics. Okay? Because number one, you cannot discuss corruption at all without discussing morality. And morality is something that is difficult to discuss with gamers at the best of times, but also something that I find myself not really liking to talk about very much because I live in an age where people are getting morality ideas from things like WandaVision and Doctor Strange in the Universe of Craziness or whatever the hell it was called, where the moral messages that are just in our pop fiction or pop culture right now, I find utterly reprehensible. Like, people who hold those views, like, they would upset me. And I have found more and more that talking to gamers online, not people in this community per se, who are a much different breed, but in general, talking to people about the idea of morality is just very upsetting sometimes. But, you know, that aside, the bigger problem with corruption is not only does it require a discussion about morality, but it also requires the GM to lean into their role as arbiter of a objective moral reality. Okay, you can't do corruption. You can't do corruption without this underlying principle that there are moral rules to the universe. Right? I mean, because after all, the corruption is about getting people to violate morality. So now you have to, now you're telling the GM, okay, well, you have to be a judge of people's morality, and nobody likes that. Okay? On top of that, okay, if you're a GM like me and you have rules, you don't want to run games for evil characters, because I don't. I hate evil characters. I play evil characters. I play them really well, but I hate them. I'm not rooting for them. I want them to lose, which is why it upsets me when my players keep getting their characters killed, because they're supposed to be the good guys. So, no, but The other issue there is, like, if you go full on evil in my campaign, your character is effectively dead. You have to start a new character just as if your hit points went to zero and you died. Which means if you're trying to corrupt a character, you are trying to make the player lose. Now, that is, of course, something that a lot of GMs would find absolutely reprehensible. The idea that you are, I've said reprehensible a couple of times. Maybe for next month that should be a bingo thing, is the word reprehensible. But by then I'll have a different word. Okay. So many GMs find the idea of actually working against their players, trying to create situations where their players have to fight to win, is a terrible idea. Which is ridiculous, because nobody thinks twice about, well, I'm making a combat that could potentially kill my players, right? So what's the difference? I'm making a social moral situation that could potentially take my player's character away is no different. And then on top of all of that is, because ultimately corruption is about getting people to make decisions they ought not to make, as defined by some moral framework, you can't do it mechanically. Okay? Which means you have some NPC or agent or devil or something in the world that is actively trying to corrupt a character, and you are playing that character, and if you play that character effectively, you're literally trying to corrupt your player into losing the game. So it's a way tougher subject. Like, first of all, it's hard to even explain, okay, so how do you do that? Especially because at that point, there's no game balance involved, right? Because as soon as it's just like, okay, I am just this, you know, I'm playing this character who is a corrupting devil, and I am now going to try and corrupt one of my players, there is no way to say, you know, set the difficulty level of me being really convincing, you know, and knowing how to corrupt people. Okay, I have no problem with absolutely any of the things I have said. First of all, I am fairly secure in my own personal moral framework, more or less. It is an evolving thing because everybody's personal moral framework is always evolving. I have no problem creating a world in which there is an objective moral framework and I am the arbiter of said objective moral framework. I have no problem with working to make my players lose the game. And I have no problem making them lose the game in ways that have absolutely nothing to do with dice and mechanics. I am unique in the game mastering community, I suspect, because a lot of people would hate at least two of those ideas. So, you know, that the other problem with writing this article is, how do you do it without basically ranting about morality? You know, because you start talking about morality, and the first thing you have to do just is to establish some sort of, like, I guess, moral, like a page that we can all be on about morality, right? And we live in a world now where, you know, there is a lot of discussion about morality that I never thought would be discussed. Okay, I never thought I would see the day when you would have in serious news outlets, discussions of things like, is stealing inherently immoral? You know what I mean? Like, like, who the hell thought we would hit that point? But here we are. So this is the article, like, this was what I decided would be a light, easy topic to address to reduce some of the stress on me. And it was only when I started reading it when I said, well, that's just fucking insane. That may have been a poor choice. I would love to write the article. And I don't care about the flack I'll get about it, genuinely. Like, you know what? At this point, I don't even care anymore. But at the same time, I do. And it's hard. So it's going to happen. I'm going to write this article. I'm going to write this article because it's basically me proving that I will write this article. And the flack will not be as bad as I think. And the angry article discussion will be loaded down with a lot of people discussing morality rather than the general concept of here's how you get someone to, like, this is how you give someone a nudge down the slippery slope of immorality. Okay. And you like classify, like I classified basically three different modes of corruption, three different levers to pull depending on the person. Which I'm genuinely proud of, but also a little bit troubled by. Because I'm sitting here like I realize that now I'm basically, apart from starting all the fights and knowing what I'm walking into, I am basically also writing like the training manual that they would give out in Avernus to the new Abishai who are spawned from the hell pits. So you want to corrupt a soul. Nitsua observes, I think it's a good thing you're troubled by having done a good job at writing the Devil's Manual. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's like the GM's classic dilemma, though, right? It's like if you want to make good villains, you have to yourself be kind of good at being a villain, right? Like, and that's tricky, especially because I'm not kidding. One of the reasons I love gaming as much as I do, okay, is I'm just reading. There's comment. Hey, Queasel, you have audio coming in. I'm just going to go ahead and mute you. Okay. That's one of the problems, is, right? Is if you want to go, if you want to create a hated villain, you have to be capable of playing someone you yourself hate. And you have to play it with enough relish. Because if you play a character you hate in a way that makes it obvious that you hate them, the players are going to experience an emotional dissonance and they don't understand why. You can't hate your own villains, you know, which is really weird because, I was saying one of the things I love about D&D is that I get to create a world where, you know, good does triumph over evil. You know, that's a world I want to believe in. So, you know, it is very troubling. But then, villainy would be a great article, wouldn't it? Like, how to build a... Like, there's so much I want to do. Yeah. Like, I need more on my schedule. What I need is more time. I don't know. Here's really... now this is me going a little into the weeds. As a result of me having a bit of an emotional breakdown this morning in general chat, for which I again apologize not just to Monkey, but to absolutely everybody who had to witness that and who tried to talk me off the cliff, I am sorry that that happened. But the discussion itself was very valuable because it made me start to reflect on just what the hell I am actually doing. Because I do just spend a lot of time bouncing around from article to article doing whatever seems like a good idea. And back in the day, things were more coherent. I knew what my goals were. I was teaching people how to run games, and I was writing new mechanics. And it was those two things that were my primary bread and butter. And I would spend a little bit of time, but not too much time on navel gazing. And I do write exceptionally long articles and spend a lot of time convincing people of my points. I'm starting to wonder whether I waste too much time on that. Whether one of the things that could help immensely is if I stopped feeling like I have to actually get people to believe me. Because really, it's not like, people are either going to buy it or they're not. And there's a certain point where I do always reach that point, right? Where I say, hey, this is what it is. Try it for 3 weeks. Try it for 3 months. See how it works. And if you hate it, then come back and tell me it was shit. But until then, I don't want to hear from you. Okay? Because, like, 99... Okay, that's an exaggeration. 70% of my content comes directly from experiences at the table. Okay. No. I don't want to lock comments because people are suggesting permanently close the comments. But you know what? This is the thing. Number one, I don't need to spend paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs proving my point and saying, you know, here, you should believe me and shutting down arguments. And number two, if people want to disagree with me in the comments, I have absolutely no problem saying, well, you're wrong, or just ignoring it. The problem is sometimes this is going to be a weird point now. For between proving pre-arguing versus explaining. Yeah, Nitsua brings up a good point. Because a lot of the things that people do say they get value out of my articles from is the fact that I do take the time to explain the thought process. Because the thought process is valuable, right? Anybody can memorize formula. But if you understand the thought process, you don't need to remember the formula at the table. And you can also make adjustments to the formula for your own situations. If you learn how to think, you are way better off than just learning what to do. So, and there is a, it would be very difficult for me to find the proving versus arguing versus explaining thing, you know? Because a lot of my thought process is convincing myself I have figured something out. Like, I know that seems weird, you know? But anyway, okay. The other thing, though, about the comment section. Like, yeah, because Guy is saying that what I said does not sound accurate. And I assume that what Guy is referring to is me saying I have no problem with people not believing me and just saying, well, you're wrong. Here's where I run into trouble, okay? People come to my website for good advice, and I feel weirdly responsible for what they receive. The same, by the way, in Discord, okay? I feel responsible for what they get from my website. If someone comes to my website, I have made a promise to them. I am going to teach you a way to run a game good, to run a good pretend elf game, for what that's worth. And that's probably not worth taking as seriously as I do. If somebody comes along and gives bad advice in my comment section, I feel duty bound to say to people, this is not good advice. You should not follow it. Instead, do this. Here's why. Okay. Now, I realize that the angry persona, that often comes out as, no, you're a moron and I'm the only smart person in the room. Everybody ignore this moron. Which is a whole separate issue. But end of the day, I do feel responsible for what is posted on my website. It's one thing, you know, if people have differing viewpoints, and that's totally fine. But if someone gives something in my comment section that I view as legitimately bad advice that will lead people down a bad path, I do feel honor-bound to say, I wouldn't go that way. I wouldn't follow that person. Okay. It is the same way I feel so responsible for things like medical advice, health advice, and life advice in the Discord. Okay. Even though I myself have certainly broken that rule. Okay. The thing is, if someone comes into the Discord and gives someone bad advice that actually ends up doing them harm, I feel responsible because it was published under my name, which is why those rules exist. If I'm giving the bad advice, I own the consequences. And I am actually careful about the advice I do give, even when I give advice. I'm not, you know, I don't want to go into dark stories. Let's stay away from dark stories. I've had experiences with people online, especially people dealing with mental illness, that have ended very badly because people tried to help them online. And it always ends badly when people try to help them online. So anyway, I feel responsible for the things that happen under my name. Things, and so there's that weird sense of duty whenever somebody posts a comment on my website that I think is going to land someone in trouble in Pretend Elf Games. So, anywho. So, yeah, you are right, guy. It is not entirely accurate for me to say, well, if you don't believe me, that's fine. And I think there's really the problem there, and I will admit the truth, is that I should respect my readers more. Okay, now I have a lot of respect for most of my readers. But when I say that, what I really do need to learn how to do is to trust each person reading my website to be smart enough to separate what is above the comment line from what is below the comment line and trust them to, you know, weigh my advice and the 5,000 words carefully explaining the thought process and the experience behind that and the random comment Snarkington McSnarkpants is giving, saying, no, that's wrong. You know, you want to get buy-in and make your game interesting and make the right choice. And if they don't, maybe they come back a little bit smarter next time and say, maybe I should have listened to the angry guy instead of the commenter. But, you know, you get a certain level of pride, right? And I mean, when I say pride, I mean pride, the sinful kind of pride. I don't mean pride like the I'm proud of what I do. I mean the sinful kind of pride that is like I think I know better than everybody else, and therefore I am responsible for making sure everybody gets the best lesson, which is my lesson. So what can you do there, you know, other than be less prideful? So, anyway, long story short, after the conversation today, one of the things I am reflecting more on is what I want to do going forward with the Angry GM and how I want to do it. And it's not so much, like, everything's not going to change tomorrow. I'm not going to come back and say, okay, now I am destroying the website and starting totally fresh and being a different person. I'm actually just trying to locate my core values, my core engagements, figure out how I can veer closer to them, and then see if I can learn how to cut out the crap. Okay? Especially because, like, my articles are getting longer and longer, and that's not good for my workflow. They need to be getting shorter, not longer. I should be getting better at this. Monk Manual, the Angry Domain. Yeah, I know, a number of people have started using the Monk Manual. I know a couple of people found it after I called attention to it in the Productivity Club. So it is really an amazing tool. It is if you actually devote to it. Which, that's a separate problem, isn't it? Like, you can buy all the tools in the world. If you don't actually sit and use the tools the way you're supposed to, fully, and with commitment and investment, then they ain't going to do you any good, are they? But that's not the tool's fault. So, I would be doing much better with the Monk Manual if I did better with the Monk Manual. Okay. Let me do something fun, because I didn't want to get bogged down, but here we got bogged down. So while people start typing comments, because it's about the, or questions, so it's about the time where I should start taking questions. So if you have a question, go ahead and type it into the live chat text channel. Use the big red question mark emoji right at the end of your question so that I can scroll past and see them easily. And if you actually rather would have a comment that you would like me to comment back on, or at least something you would like me to see, use the big red emoji exclamation point. And meanwhile, I just wanted to take a brief moment to mention, and I'm actually going to pull up a link so I don't forget about it. Tiny and I have been playing one of these Okay, well, okay. So here's the story. Tiny and her mother are fans of this YouTuber podcaster named Bailey Sarian, who she has a very interesting format where she sits there and she tells true crime and supernatural mystery stories, like people, you know, and everybody in the house was killed mysteriously, you know, true events from history or recent events, while also doing a makeup tutorial. Why is this her format? Why did she decide that makeup and murder go together? I don't know, but this is what she does. And Tiny and her mother love it. And every Monday they get together and watch it or listen to it or whatever. As a result of that, because Bailey Sarian has a sponsorship, she is sponsored by the Hunt a Killer Murder Mystery Box, okay, which is a subscription program where every month, why is this not copy-pasting the address? Oh, okay. Where every month you get sent a box that contains the trappings, like the evidentiary trappings of a murder mystery. And you are then submit the answers to certain questions about the mystery online. It's an episodic thing. So we get our first package and there's a letter in there from Michelle Gray of Michelle Gray Investigations, who is tapping us to help with this murder and mystery because this girl washed up dead on a beach in this little coastal town in Maine or somewhere. And the sister's convinced it was foul play, but the police said she fell off a bluff. And then, you know, and then you get, and you just get a pile of like stuff, you know, like, here's dossiers of people who were involved and here's a brochure from the town. And it's all very done with this, with, you know, it's all very authentic, and I'm sure people have seen these mystery boxes around. But the Hunt a Killer, they're really cool. They're a lot of fun. Tiny and I have been doing them together. And they also sell standalone single boxes. And we have done both. So we have been working our way through, we've gone through the first three episodes of the Mallory Rock mystery, which is the one we're working on now, which I just described. But we also did two standalone boxes. One was like Death at a Dive Bar, and the other one was like Murder on the Midway or something. And again, it's, you know, it's kind of like people have seen like these escape room in a boxes and puzzles in a box and whatever. And it's basically that. You get a bunch of tchotchkes and feelies and random crap. And then, you know, you solve a mystery from it. You piece together the evidence, motive means an opportunity. There are a surprising number of people who use actually rather sophisticated, but not too sophisticated, codes to convey information. Like everybody does nowadays. Everybody's always writing notes in substitution cipher shift codes. You know? But apart from that, they're actually pretty cool. So I guess call that shit I don't hate. I've been hoping that if I kept talking that questions or comments would pop in. Otherwise, I'm going to have to come up with other stuff to talk about. And God, I'm hoping that I don't have to start to, because the next thing I have to talk about is bug snacks. How close would you say you are to completing the core set of rules for Smafarge? About yay far. Okay, so, you know, picture about that, but in time. Okay, why is necromancy evil in the Angryverse from moral philosophy perspective, and is mind control magic equally evil from the same perspective? Why or why not? Mind control and necromancy are not... So, okay, actually... Oh, that's a weird question. First of all, necromancy is evil in the Angryverse because... Among the other tenets of evil, like what defines evil morally in my world is you know, like, I don't subscribe to a pure harm-based morality, because I think harm-based morality is bullshit. Like, if you do no harm, you're a good person. I think if you do no harm, you're not a bad person. If you want to be a good person, you have to go a little farther than that, personally. You have to go a little farther. I didn't leave the world in a worse place than when I found it. But anyway, sorry to all of you, like, consequentialists and harm-based morality people. But anyway, here is the thing. Part of being a good person is that there are certain things that are sacred, and they must be treated as sacred. And one of the things that is sacred is life, death, and the dead. These things are sacred. They are not to be touched. Okay? They're not to be messed with by mortals or any other beings for that matter. So the reason necromancy is evil at its core in universe is because life, death, and the dead are sacred and you don't mess with them. And that is the way it is. Okay? There are other things in the Angryverse that are sacred. Interestingly enough, agency does not reach that same level of sacredness. Okay? Does that mean Raised Dead is also evil in the Angryverse? Raised Dead is a very tricky issue. Generally speaking, Raised Dead barely exists in the Angryverse. There are almost no ways to bring someone back from the dead. Because I'm seeing things as they pop up. But without, you know, if you attempt to raise the dead, bring someone back from the dead without a mandate directly from the gods, yes, you have done a terrible thing. That said, only good aligned clerics can cast Raise Dead anyway. And then that implies a mandate from the gods, and nobody can cast Raise Dead in this day and age anyway. I neatly get around the question of bringing characters back from the dead by saying, well, generally you can't. That's the stuff of legends. That's ridiculous things nobody believes in anymore. Mind control magic, like, okay, domination is really gray. It is not evil in the same way that necromancy is evil. Charm is less evil, because in the end, charm is influence, and it can't make people go against their basic nature. At least, again, I'm going back to the old days of D&D here, okay? And honestly, part of it is also the recognition that what you do in this world that doesn't touch the divine world isn't as important, okay? Life and death and the dead are sacred because they touch the divine. Your personal actions on a day-to-day basis, however horrible they may or may not be, do not touch the divine in the same way. It's bad. Yeah, mind control should not be done. In charm and influence and suggestion spells, they're kind of a tricky issue in themselves. But, you know, I'm less concerned about them from a moral standpoint. Okay. Organized play. What is it good at? What's its proper use? Organized play is good for organizing a bunch of people into play groups. And the proper use is to organize people into play groups. Organized play is a way people can get together and have fun in a sanctioned environment. It gives people an opportunity to play games without necessarily having to get their games together themselves. Often it provides people with game materials so that they don't have to write their own or buy their own. Of course, you know, different companies handle it in different ways. And from a marketing perspective, organized play is a great way to get your game in front of people who might not otherwise discover or buy them. Let's see. Proficiency dice and ability check proficiency variant rules. Good or bad for a 5e game? Honestly, you know what? I don't think this shit matters. Good or bad for a game, I don't think it matters one way or the other. Okay, people will make probability arguments and mathy arguments and arguments about the dice and this. Like, you can find reasons to say proficiency dice are better than static proficiency bonuses because. And you can also find reasons to say proficiency modifiers are better than proficiency dice because. Okay, end of the day, it's a wash. Just use whatever you think is fun and easy. Proficiency dice, it's a little bit... Proficiency dice is slightly more of a load than just a static proficiency modifier. I don't like the ability check proficiency variant rules, only because they seem to be a little bit redundant. Like, if I'm remembering correctly, that's where certain classes, certain characters just, you know, you're proficient in strength checks. So whenever your class makes a strength check, you get the proficiency there. It's like, at that point, like, just drop proficiency altogether. Because... That's a really long argument. I want to make sure I have time to get to more questions. So I think it's a wash. Do whatever you want. I don't think there's a good or bad for 5e game answer in there. What is the best way of making characters if curated character generation is the second best? Oh, you're not. Are you ready for this? You're not going to like it. You are not. Everybody thinks it's just random rolling, like straight up, straight down the thing, random rolling. Okay. It is technically an unpublished system that I have not seen fit yet to write up and work out all the details of. It is something, it's one of those things that has been sitting in my notebook now for a little over a year, waiting for me to touch. Okay. And it is also the sort of thing that will get me in a hell of a lot of trouble with a certain crowd of people who, you know, want to talk about reprehensible bioessentialism, determinism bullshit. And those people can fuck right off because they're idiots. Okay. This is it. It is the... Okay. This is just the skeleton. Because it needs work. But I'm going to share it right now. Here we go. Okay. Step one. You roll for or choose if... I'm not even going to say or choose. I'm going to say as written and then understand that the GM is going to fuck with this. Okay. You roll for your race. And the table that you roll on your race is based on, you know, actual commonalities and rarities in the world. Your race determines how you roll for ability scores. So for each ability score, you will roll, I think I was playing with the idea of 2d6 plus 1, 2d6 plus 3, or 2d6 plus 6, depending on your race. Okay. So then, after you have rolled for your race, I believe, what was it next? Okay, you roll for the background into which you were born. You know, the type of community you were born in, the type of, your social status and all of that stuff. Then you... choose your background, you know, like your apprenticeship. You were a smith or a farmer or whatever. Obviously, though, depending on your life, you may not have some options available. So you choose, so you were born in an elven community you can't be a miner, right? Then, and that applies some modifiers to your character. It gives you some skills and maybe screws with your abilities. Or even, what I was thinking is it even lets you, tweak your own ability scores. Like, rob a point here for a point there kind of a thing. Like, if you became a farmer, you can take a point from a mental ability score and give it to a physical ability score. Or something like that. So it'll let you, fiddle with it to reflect the fact that you made this choice and now you're tweaking your own biology. And then, I just got the 15-minute warning here. Then you choose your class and someone dropped out of the call. That's how offensive this was, huh? And then you choose your class. Okay? So that's it. And it, the basic idea is that it is, it's a kind of, it's a nature and nurture system. Okay? There are things that you have no choice about. Your, the situation of your birth is determined by the dice. What you do with that situation is determined by your character's choices in the world, but may or may be limited by the circumstances of their life. Okay? Now, I am actually toying with the idea that a player, to a limited extent, is allowed to nudge die rolls a certain number of times, which will create some sort of penalty later on in the game. Okay, and here is the idea. It is that if you are nudging the die rolls, if you are saying, no, I want to decide my race, or I want to make sure I have this ability score, or this background, or whatever, okay, you are creating a character of destiny. Okay, fate has intervened and bent your character's life a certain way. And because of that, there is something about the character that then forces them along a certain path later on. Some kind of story thing that, well, I mean, you're a character of destiny, so now you're kind of screwed free will-wise in this one other respect. Okay, that is the best character generation system that exists, or at least it will be once I actually write it up and decide I'm willing to risk writing that. Okay. Guy asks, what's the story with Gen Con and you're not going? Okay, the story is simple. There is a convention down in Indianapolis called Gen Con, short for Geneva Convention, which has nothing to do with the war crimes treaty, but instead Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which was where Gen Con was originally held before it moved, before it outgrew that, moved to Milwaukee and then Indianapolis. I'm not going this year because I'm not going this year. It, there wasn't really any reason. Honestly, one of the money is a factor this year. And the other thing is, like, I don't know where we're at now with different places and COVID restrictions and things and what places are doing regarding that. I don't want to be bothered. Like, the reason Tiny and I are not going to GameholeCon this year is because of the vaccine passport bullshit. So, that is not something that I will participate in. I'm not talking, I don't have an opinion on the vaccine itself, or at least not one that I'm going to talk about. But as far as a private company checking my private medical records, fuck them. So, let's see. Scales of Equilibrium. Is adding trainers to your game or something along those lines article planned? Yes, it is definitely going to be an article now. And probably an article this month and soon because it is fresh in my mind. Procellus, what methods or tools might exist in Smafarge to help a GM with good scenario design? You're asking me to speculate on things I really have not even... This, all I can say is this. Smafarge's core design principle is it is a game in which GMs can design their own games easily. Okay? That's one of my goals. My goal is to accept that the absolute best reason for a GM to run a role-playing game is so that they can create their own worlds and stories and share them with their friends. Okay? Not so that they can buy the latest $60 pile of crap from WotC and then try and figure out how the hell to run that. Okay? GMs like creating their own shit. It shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be time-consuming. There needs to be a role-playing game that is a toolbox for those GMs. And there isn't one there used to be, and now Smafarge is going to be it. So I don't know what the tools are going to look like yet, but the tools are going to be there. Or either that or Smafarge fails. Thank you for your Scales of Equilibrium. Thank you for your answer. I'm debating experimenting with it and slow natural healing and was curious if you had an instant hell no response. Nah. Like I said, oh, that, yeah. Noited, how far are you in Elden Ring? I have stopped playing Elden Ring. How would you go about constructing huge, sprawling, interconnected dungeons like Stormvale or the Capital in a way that is still preserves the gameplay loops and three-session rule you've talked about? Jesus. Graph paper and a lot of time. I don't know. How would I do that? How do you build a dungeon? Like, I think, so if you go back, like, there was this YouTuber, Mark Brown, who wrote a series called Game Maker's Toolkit. And did an analysis of how the Legend of Zelda dungeons were put together called Boss Keys, a whole series. And then went on to started doing, like, Metroidvania, analysis of Metroidvania games and how they're put together. That's the basic of what you're looking at least to start with. That is a huge... Okay. You're trying to trick me into just writing the Mega Dungeon, finishing the Mega Dungeon. Because the Mega Dungeon all the stuff I wrote about how to design a Mega Dungeon basically explains that. Okay? It's just I never actually... Like, the only thing I didn't do with the Mega Dungeon was I didn't actually sit down and draw all the maps and write all the encounters. I told everyone how to design it. So. Gen Con was really good with COVID restrictions, but I got COVID from Gen Con, so take that as you will. I mean, I accept it as a risk. You know what? That's the thing. If I'm going to avoid the restrictions, yes, I'm going to risk the disease. So, So let's see. What else? More questions. Wes Belmont, now I'm reading comments because I'm now just reading through. I'm now just reading through things that people have said. The best way of making characters is cool as heck. Yep, it's going to be one of those polarizing things. You either love it or you hate it. Scales of equilibrium. I suppose if I can sneak it in here, feelings on slow natural healing, if same pass. So I feel, okay. I actually feel like if you were not running D&D 5e, slow natural healing would be more useful. Because one of the things slow natural healing does is what is... But slow natural healing is essentially one of the ways you make town mode a thing, right? It's the idea that you can't just jump back out into the adventure after you get back from the previous one. It also adds a consequence to not handling the adventure well. If you come back to town and you're not too beat up, you can jump out on the next adventure. Likewise, if you have a shitty start to an adventure and get really, really beat up, now you have to start the next... Now, if you want to go back and continue the adventure, now you're beat up, okay? Which means you have, you have an extra challenge. So it also adds a consequence of not playing well. I wholeheartedly support both of those things. The idea of a consequence of not playing well, because right now D&D doesn't care if you play it well. If the players fuck up everything, as long as everybody still crosses the finish line alive, I mean, I'm swearing a lot and I'm sorry. If the players cross the finish line and everybody is still alive, then they won. Yay, hoo-hoo. And, doesn't matter how they won, just matters that they won. Okay? If it costs them all their resources and they come back to town beat up as hell, and then there is some next adventure or threat they can't respond to, then there's a consequence, right? Or if they go in guns blazing without a plan and without good information and get themselves beat so bad that they have to run away, and then they can't come back for a week, then they learn next time to go into the dungeon with a little more care. You know, maybe don't spread out and have three different people look through three different doors. Okay. So, yeah, I'm all in support of slow natural healing, but understand it's going to change the pace of the game, and then you better make town mode interesting. Would you say that JQuaying dungeons is worthwhile, given players experience the game in a linear fashion? JQuaying is a good trick. For those not in the know, I think this was an Alexandrian article. I'm looking it up right now. I have 5 minutes left, so I'm going to... It is a cute little way to mess with the layout of a rather simple dungeon. So, oh, what? Shit. Ignore that. Why is my copy paste not copy pasting? It's only pasting. Okay. Oh, my control key on my keyboard is dead. Well, that's awkward. Okay. Well, Nitsua got it. Yeah. Jake Quang in the dungeon. Read the article. It's neat. But you also have to remember that players do not experience the game in a linear fashion. Okay, it only feels like they do. It never feels as linear from the inside as it does when you look at the map. Proselyst, thank you for the... running through Dark Forces 2 recently. Surprised how manageable no natural healing can be. Proselyst, thank you for the live chat today. It was a good distraction from the day. Thank you all for coming to the live chat. I enjoyed it, and I kind of needed that today. And I kind of needed the reminder that, gaming is fun. So, powerful demon Queasel, I enjoyed the live chat. Thanks for hanging out. Scales of Equilibrium, another comment. Yeah, I love the idea of trying to capture the old school feeling. Also debating using a silver system instead of gold to make gold more rare, cool. Campaign series, open world series is what caused me to be an instant patron. It was like a paradigm. Haven't had one of those since I read Return of the Lazy DM, to be honest. Love your work. Keep it up. Thank you. You are very welcome. Thank you for all the kind words, Scales of Equilibrium. I'm glad that that has helped you. K99, how far along do you think Smafarge will be this time? Smafarge is on Blizzard time, okay? There are no going to... Like, you can keep asking me how long, how far, how much, whatever. Smafarge is on Blizzard time, okay? That's the only answer I'm going to give. For those not in the know, back when Blizzard didn't suck, okay... They were very public about releasing... Doug is saying old school Blizzard. Modern day Blizzard is garbage, right? Back when Blizzard didn't suck, they were very clear that they would not release anything they didn't feel was ready for release. Okay? And that became a joke in the gaming community, but a loving joke, an affectionate joke. Blizzard time meant, I'm not going to rush this... And, you know, to get it done. If I feel it needs extra time, I'm going to give it the extra time. And also, I'm not going to announce a deadline until I feel comfortable that I can meet the deadline. Because if I announce a premature deadline, then I'm going to make my thing crap in an effort to meet the deadline. That said, there will be a deadline someday. Okay, and it will be a deadline that is far out. I am not going to suddenly say, guess what? Turns out I've been writing it in secret, and tomorrow is Smafarge Day. Okay, there will come a day when I am going to put an actual real deadline. And that is the day when I feel it's a deadline I can comfortably reach. Okay, because deadlines are important, because there is a certain point where every designer has to stop designing. And it is never the point where the designer thinks they're done. Okay, no designer... ever feels like they are done when something is done. And that's the importance of deadlines. Realistically, I was going to say something more. That's how I get... I hear the Dyson maps are already jQuery'd if you need something fast and free. Dyson maps have a very specific old school look to them. They look like dungeon maps that are printed in blue in the inside cover of 30-page soft cover modules. Take that for what you will. You could decide whether I meant that as a compliment or an insult, but nonetheless, that is what they look like. All right, so I think that is it. So thank you everybody for coming and hanging out. As I said, I really need this. Again, I am sorry for my emotional outburst this morning in general chat. It was not appropriate, but I'm really, really also terribly grateful to everybody who not only talked me down from the cliff, but gave me some actual good, useful life advice, or not life advice, because I will only use that in running pretend elf games. I see the warning, Dawoosh, I'm doing the sign out, so don't mute me before I finish the sign out, and then I'm done. Okay, so I am grateful. I'm also grateful to everybody who continues to support me and for everybody's patience this month as I take some time to take care of myself, which is sadly sorely needed. So with that, good night, everyone. And I will be in touch more soon and talk to you all next month.